Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, let's go.
Snap, blitz, throwing. Peterman, open man. The catch is made by the tight end, and he's hit
down. He stripped him.
The ball, and it's picked up by the Bears. Running down the left sideline. Eddie Jackson, he's going in, baby. Touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. Miller is out there again with Bellamy and Gabriel left. Snap, they're going to run it to Howard. Slanting right to the 10. Oh. Bulldozes through a defender at the 5. He is in for the touchdown. Ran over. Jordan Poyer, the safety, the poor guy had no chance. Third down and 3 for Peterman. He's got a back to his left, 3 receivers to the right. He takes the snap, coming to the near side.
It's broken
up and intercepted on the deflection. Leonard Floyd, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Bears. Number 2 today. They are around the ball. The celebration begins in the end zone. Bears extend their lead to 20-0 here in Buffalo.
Chase Daniel with one more knee. They're not even going to let it go. It's it, 30 seconds to go, and players come to midfield. The Bears come into Buffalo and do their job. They kick some tail, and they did it with defense. Couple of defensive touchdowns, 4 takeaways, a few sacks, and some Jordan Howard touchdown runs. Bears go to 5-3.
Those highlights are courtesy of our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Jeff Joniak on the call. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 10 o'clock. Lance Briggs is here with me. He's here with me until 8:30. It's been a pretty big news day today in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to comment on this, but you can keep eating your salad. I told you, I got you. I got you for a couple minutes because there's some things that I want to say, some things that need to be discussed. Mm. If you're just tuning in at the score and you're like, well, what is Lawrence talking about? Well, we were all greeted this morning with the news that the Blackhawks are like, yeah, we're good on Coach Quenneville. And they ended up firing Joel Quenneville. At 8:40 tonight, Sam Fels is going to join me, and we're going to talk about why that happened and what the Blackhawks end up doing next, and are some of these issues systemic with them. So I'm very excited to talk with Sam. And if you haven't picked up his book, if you're a big Blackhawks fan, you need to pick up the book Madison Street Station that Sam Fels wrote. It was really, really good. It's one of my favorite sports books, honestly, that I have ever read. On top of that, now there's rumors that Rick Renteria, the manager of the Chicago White Sox, is getting an extension to stay the manager of the Chicago White Sox. The timing of it was really interesting. And, you know, I love my White Sox, but I got to say that if the story is breaking on a night where the Blackhawks fired their coach and it's also election night, maybe you could wait a couple of days before that leaks out so that Ricky could get the spotlight a little bit. Because now it feels like that story is a little bit buried, where you have Bears team is 5-3, Blackhawks team that fired their head coach, and people went out and voted today. Like in an election, in a statewide election. But whatever, I digress. On top of that, there's news coming out of Washington, not election related. Or maybe it is, I don't know. But there's news out of Washington that the Nationals offered Bryce Harper a deal that was going to pay him $30 million per year. So if you were thinking, well, Bryce Harper's friends with Chris Bryant, they go back to Vegas. He's got a dog named Wrigley. And I saw him wearing a Bears cap earlier this week. He's going to come to Chicago for a discount. You are sadly mistaken. Bryce is about to get paid. Like, not just kind of paid, but paid. Mm. So there is a lot of stuff going on. The Bulls won in overtime triple overtime last night. And there's a lot to discuss. See? I told you. I got you covered for a couple minutes.
I appreciate it. These cucumbers are tasty.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So would you have a chicken?
I had the crispy chicken salad.
And it was good.
Tasty.
Right on.
Spicy ranch.
Spicy ranch is solid. We are. I shout out to Fleckenstein's Bakery. I went out to go see my parents out in the South Burbs today, and I said, you know, let me go hook my guys up. So I have Mike Chan and Ray.
You know what I'm excited about?
What?
I'm excited about Forte's breakfast.
Yeah, man. Sunday. Yeah, Forte has decided that he's going to bring breakfast in for us, and we're down for that because the boys are hungry.
Very. It's a long day.
Here's what I've now found out. I had this conversation. I had this thought while I was driving, making the drive out to DeKalb.
I bet you had a lot of thoughts.
I had a lot because there was a lot of time on the drive out here. I've decided that me doing that show is like I'm working with the Avengers, but I'm not an Avenger.
You're Agent Coulson.
That's exactly who I thought
I was. Agent Coulson.
That's exactly who I was like, I'm Agent Coulson.
Yeah.
I know the guys and I can help them a little bit, but I'm not an Avenger.
Right.
And they are. So that you read my mind on that one. See, this is what I'm talking about.
Now.
That's why
we nerd out.
We have become a great team over at NBC Sports Chicago and of course here on The Score. How excited are you for the next 8 weeks? Seeing that the Bears, like you said earlier, control their own destiny. All they kind of have to do is win out and they're in great shape. To be a playoff team, but just as far as the last couple seasons have been so disappointing,
right?
How does it feel to be covering and rooting for a winning team?
It's good to be at the halfway point and still be hopeful, you know, and still have a lot of hope, you know, that our Bears can not only, you know, not only be in games, not only have a chance, but have hope that we should win these games. You know, the Bears haven't played a game this year that they couldn't have won. And that's what brings a lot of hope for them being in first place at the halfway point and being in position and getting ready to play in the division. Three games in the division right now. I just it has been a while, and I think that with each week, we're going to be glued to our station. When Bears are playing good football, you know, it just seems like the country is running a little bit smoother.
Yeah, that's the case. And you have the Bears now going back on national television. It's been the last game. Yeah. The last game you guys are on national TV was the Jason Campbell game? The last Sunday night game was the Jason Campbell game.
So when you said the last time you threw, you definitely said you guys. So I got thrown in there.
Well,
got thrown in there
again. Not an Avenger.
I haven't played since 2014. Now.
So I just wanted to share. So it'll be fun. They get a Sunday night game. They get to be in front of the country. I will tell you, Minnesota's defense is kind of getting back to being. What they had 10 sacks this past weekend, which is good news for the Bears.
They're no Bears defense.
Well,
they're no Bears defense.
I think it's great news for the Bears because if they were able to do that against Detroit, there's no reason that the Bears can't do that against Detroit.
Right.
And that's the game that's in front of them right now. You've played against Matthew Stafford. What's he like?
Well, you got to remember when I played against Matthew Stafford, Megatron was there. They were throwing the ball, you know, 95% of the time. So, you know, their tendencies were so incredibly high. We knew what they were going to throw typically, you know, wherever Megatron lined up, wherever Calvin Johnson lined up, we knew that there were about three different routes they were going to run. Now on a Bears down year, you know, they'll find those points, but on most of those years, you know, PETA locked them up pretty decently well, you know, over the years. That was one of the great battles that
agreed.
You know, that the Bears had against the Detroit Lions was Charles Tillman against Calvin Johnson.
I always love watching that because you could tell both guys, like, there was a high respect level, but there was a high competition
level. I even remember, you know, our rookie year when Peanut got a chance to defend against Randy Moss, you know, and took a couple balls from Randy. You know, that was, to me, that was a statement that Peanut was saying that I'm here, I'm legit, and you need to be aware of me, you know, rather than me be aware of you.
Well, they do seem to have a little bit of a run game. They got a chance with Kerryon Johnson. He's already over 500 yards, so there's the possibility that they could end up having a 1,000-yard rusher, which is something that Matthew Stafford hasn't had in his career in Detroit.
Here's an interesting stat, though. When he's rushed for less than 70 yards over the last four or five games, they've lost. You know, if he's rushed over 70 yards over the last four or five games, they've won. So I hope somebody from the Bears staff is listening. Keep him under 70 yards.
So the goal whenever – I've heard you say this, other defensive players say this too, that you have to earn the right to rush the passer by stopping the run.
Absolutely.
So what do you need to do to kind of make sure that guys are fitting up right, getting to their gaps and making plays?
I mean, that's your job. You know, that's your job. You know, you expect Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd up front, you know, to be in their gaps, to attack their gaps. And you also, you know, you can count on Danny Trevathan and Roquan Smith, you know, to fill the other gaps and take off those double teams or shoot those gaps and make plays in the backfield. That's what you have to do, and that's what they've been doing. You know, I'm not worried about Bears' run defense. I think their run defense is right where it needs to be, and they're going to establish that, I think, early. And when you take that away and you make a team one-dimensional, there's a lot you can do defensively.
Were you okay with Khalil Mack sitting for a couple weeks?
Yes. You were, too.
I definitely was. Here's what I'm worried about, though, 55.
Okay, what are you worried about? Rust? You worry about rust?
No, not with Khalil Mack. The dude came off the beach and was the best player in the NFL
right.
the first month of the season. I'm worried that he's more injured than the Bears say he is.
Why do you say that?
Let me break it down for you. Like the skepticism of a reporter.
So to burst people's bubble
I'm not trying to burst the bubble. I'm just letting you know how the process works inside my crazy little head.
Okay.
So we're sitting there listening to Matt Nagy talk. He's talking about the injured guys, and he was asked about Allen Robinson and Khalil Mack. And he said, what will they do this week? And he said, well, it'll kind of be like last week.
Smart.
And so I had two thoughts on that. The thought one was, they're more hurt than we thought. And two was, why tell Detroit that Khalil Mack is going to be back? Why tell them that Allen Robinson is going to be back? There's really no reason to do that. But I will be watching the injury report big time tomorrow. Because if Khalil Mack is no practice or limited participation.
I don't see him being limited. I see him being limited participation, and that being because he's going through the warm-up and the stretch.
Right.
There's no point in having him go out and fully practice when you're nursing something. No matter if he's back to, you know, 85%, 89%, You heal it as long as you possibly can. You stay off it as long as you can.
So you slow play it so that you get the best version of him on Sunday.
Right. You know, Friday, maybe he runs a little bit.
Full participation.
Maybe he gets into it a little bit, depending on how you practice. You know, some teams want to practice 100 miles an hour on Friday. You know, so maybe Friday is not a good practice for him to come back. Maybe Saturday. You know, whatever practice it is that you scaled back is the practice that he should come out, because you don't. What are you worried about? You worried about him not being on top of his game, not knowing where he has to line up.
Have no concern about rust. I have no concern that Khalil Mack, when he is put on the field, is going to be Khalil
then
Mack.
Then why not rest him all the way up until Saturday?
Okay. All right, that's I
and
just
let him play on Sunday.
I hope that you're right and I'm wrong.
Right,
I really do. It's just the spider senses kind of went off, and I was like.
Well, you know, Nagy's a new coach, you know, and sometimes he might say things he may not. He might, you know, and afterwards, you know, Scott Hagel's waiting there. He's like, maybe you shouldn't have said that way.
See, but I think that he's smart enough. That's why I give him credit. I think that he's smart enough to play the game, too, and go, we'll be like next week, and we'll see where Khalil Mack is, knowing full well that Mack's going to play on Sunday because it's – an extra couple minutes here or there for Matt Patricia to worry about what the Bears look like when Mac is not there versus what they look like when he is there. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to point out that that's what was going through my head.
You're being a negative Nancy?
I was. That's fine. Negative Nate, whatever you want
to
do.
I need you to be a positive Polly.
Okay.
Okay.
Peter Positive. Yeah. Petey the Positive is what I need to be this week. But, you know, it's hard for me to let go of my
right.
natural skepticism.
Right.
It's a very difficult thing for me to do. So it's something I'm looking at.
Well, everything's gonna come to the light once Sunday comes. Yeah, if we watch him on the field and he doesn't look, you know, the way he looked against Green Bay Packers on, you know, that first half, then we know it was more than what it was. But
I'm also concerned that do a little Shakespeare, the lady doth protest too much. That the Bears were like, no, not a high ankle sprain. Totally not a high ankle sprain. Not a high ankle sprain at all. And then Khalil Mack's not going to play this week.
Okay,
he's also not going to play this week.
Okay, let me ask you this. How would put yourself in the head coach's shoes? How do you answer a question when you know it's an ankle injury, but people are asking, they're like, you know, how serious is the injury?
I would lie. I mean, because that's what – there's no consequences to it, especially if you're doing all the proper things with the injury report. I completely understand the job of the coach in that situation.
So you would lie. What about with just withholding information?
It's a lie of omission.
Right.
And again, I agree that from their perspective, that is what they are supposed to do.
Right.
My job is to try and find out if he's lying.
Now, I'll tell you one thing I won't say. If I was a coach, I wouldn't say, you know, I'm going to have to look at the tape.
I'm going to have to look at the film. Oh,
you know?
My God. Why is it?
On a positive play.
You knew this was going to set me off. Why is it that when Nagy is breaking down a positive play, he is seeing it from every angle?
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have to look at the film.
Oh, man. The elbow was at 90 degrees.
He breaks it down, like, down to the smallest minute point.
Right.
But let it be a negative play. Let Mitch throw an interception, ask him about it. I didn't see it. It was on the other side of the field.
I'm going to have to watch the tape on that.
You know, I mean, these things are hard to diagnose when
it was a 50-50 ball.
Oh, my God.
It was a 50-50 ball, you know?
Except he shouldn't have thrown it. It shouldn't have been a 50-50 ball. It should have been a 100-0 ball.
Period.
Because it should have been a touchdown. Taylor Gabriel was running wide open. Why you make me do this, Lance? Why you have to bring this up? Why you up here bringing up old stuff, man?
That's when I'm like, thanks, coach.
I got one more segment with Lance Briggs. We are having too good of a time here at Fatty's Pub and Grill in beautiful DeKalb. It's the Miller Lite Top Draft Show. We got one more segment with Boogie. Back after this on The Score. This hour of the show is being brought to you by our fine friends over at Pearl Mortgage. Go to perldavid.com. I saw David. He was in the Score studios a couple weeks ago. Just busted my balls. Like, just couldn't stop. Like, just seeing me. But that's why I love David. And actually, he actually did help me get my mortgage when he was at another place, and I can tell you that he does a great job. So if you're looking to get a mortgage done, go to Pearl Mortgage. Go to perldavid.com. I'm hanging out with the one, the only, number 55, Lance Briggs.
Getting some DeKalb love out here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They are happy to see you. So let's talk a little bit about Sunday and what you want to see specifically from Mitchell Trubisky, who we have not talked about in the entire time that we have hung out, which I actually think is a good thing. That
it is.
It wasn't – that game was really weird. It wasn't like he was going to be able to get into a rhythm, but he didn't play a great game.
41-9, you know.
It's get out of there with the win and get home healthy.
Right.
So going up against Detroit – is there anything that Buffalo did that you expect that the Lions are going to do to try and get Mitch off his game?
I'll tell you what. He better be aware of Darius Slay and where he lines up on the field. You know, I think he led the league in interceptions last year. You know, he's a ball hawk. You know, and if you if he tries to throw one of those balls where it's a little bit high, a little bit outside or a little bit behind, Darius Slay is going to make you pay.
Football Outsiders, this is going to seem antithetical to some people, but Football Outsiders, they're one of the guys that could break down the film. They do some of the statistical stuff. Right. And they have Mitchell Trubisky as the most inaccurate passer. And that's not looking at completion percentage. That's not looking at ball placement. And they have him at 22% as far as balls that he's missed on throws. And these are things that you've brought up. It's not just about whether or not the pass necessarily gets completed. How does it get completed? Does the receiver have to come back and fight for the ball?
Right.
Does the receiver have to stop and turn around instead of catching the ball in stride?
Mm-hmm.
Those are things where I think he can still get better at.
Yeah. It comes down to habits, you know, and it'd be really interesting to see his habits in practice and if these routine throws that we see in the games where it's a little bit left, a little bit right, a little bit high, if that's happening in practice, because typically that's where the habits begin. You know, the habits begin there, but I don't like the habit of missing short passes or throwing it a little bit high. Like, you know, I'm going to say this over and over again. Every pass has to mean enough for you to get it to your playmakers, no matter what it is, you know. And yeah, he made a comment early in the season where he tried to throw a screen pass, batted away, and he said, "Well, you know, batted passes happen. Batted passes happen. Yeah, when you're drop back throwing the ball, but when you're throwing a screen, you know guys are coming. You know to throw it just high enough where they can't touch it to your running back. You know, maybe your running back doesn't get any yards at all, but." You either know that he shouldn't get the ball, you throw it in the ground, or if you're going to get it to him, get the ball to him, you know. And so, you know, it's a very fixable habit. It's a very fixable thing to do. You know, bad habits can be fixed. And so, you know, when these next three games come up, you know, starting with Detroit, there's going to come a time where we're going to need Mitchell to be on point with his throw. There's going to be a guy that's going to be wide open, or there's going to have a step on his man, and we're going to need Mitchell to make that throw. And if he makes it, if he makes it to me, it mattered enough. If he doesn't, if it's a little high, or if it's a little to the left, or if it's a little behind, then to me, it didn't matter enough. And that was the habit, you know, that he's developed upon on himself, and he has to clear himself of that habit.
Sir, as always, this was great.
It's been real.
I appreciate you jumping out here and hanging out.
Yes.
Nice job with the chicken salad. It's a healthy choice.
Indeed.
And have a safe drive back to the city. And I will see you this weekend on NBC Sports Chicago. We will do it up big.
I figure I have Braveheart on my phone. Figure that's just enough time for me to make it back home at the end of it.
I think that actually makes a lot of sense. Lance Briggs, thank you for coming out
here
and being with the people. At Fatty's Pub and Grill here in DeKalb. Got himself a t-shirt. He is ready to hit the nightlife here in DeKalb. No, he's not doing that. My man is going to get in the car.
Stop lying.
And go home. That's what he's getting ready to do. He'll be watching some tape, though. He'll be breaking down some tape.
Yes.
That's what 55 is going to do for sure. We have got a lot of show left for you. It's crazy, all the stuff that we are doing over the next hour and a half. Now that Lance is headed out of here, we have got to talk a little bit about the Blackhawks, and we're going to do that with Sam Fells. We have got some basketball talk. We do this every year, or at least we try to do this every year, where we do a preview of the local teams, and we try to get as many of the local coaches on as possible, which is a lot of fun for me because, you know, I dabble in doing a little bit of play-by-play in college basketball here or there. And so we promised that we were going to do that tonight, that we were going to make sure that we could get some guys talked to, and Porter Moser was on the show. I don't even know what's going on in the Loyola game right now. needs getting updated. I know they jumped out to a big lead. I know ISU won their game against Florida Gulf Coast, which is great because we are going to talk with ISU head coach Dan Muller in the 9 o'clock hour. Dave Lato is going to join me as well. And we'll talk with Steve McClain. They had a rough game against Notre Dame, but I think people on the near west side of the city are pretty excited about UIC Flames basketball. We got to talk with Steve about that floor, about that new floor that UIC has. For me, you can wrap pretty much anything in the Chicago flag, and I am all about it because I think it is the best flag of any city. And now UIC has put that on its floor, which I think is so dope. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Collins and the Cats return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena this Thursday for their opener. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. That is on my list, too. We couldn't get Chris Collins tonight. We're hoping to get him at some point. But that's on my list of things that I want to get done as well. From what I have been told, the renovations to Welsh Ryan Arena are amazing. And Northwestern, they spent the year playing out in Rosemont last year. So I'm really happy that they get a chance to go home. I think it affected them because you're playing at home, but it's not really your home. If you have to take a bus, you know, 20 miles to get to your arena, that's probably not a home game. And I know DePaul fans can relate to that. So I'm glad that they got the opportunity to be back home, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the new gym looks like. Everything I've seen on social media looks like they did a really good job with their renovations. When we come back, though, the biggest news of the day was the firing of Joel Quenneville. I'm going to talk with Sam Fells about that next, and I love Fells because he is not short on opinions. So if you're a Blackhawks fan and you're like, why did this happen? Could this have been avoided? I'm going to talk with Sam Fells about that next here on The Score.
That wasn't really unique to this season. You know, I think at the end of the day, we're not where we need to be. And John said it a moment ago, you know, we want to be in the playoffs. And right now, we got some work to do to get there.
That was Stan Bowman earlier this afternoon talking about the firing of Joel Quenneville. I wouldn't say that it was necessarily a surprise. I do think that it happening like early in the morning, and you wonder if the trip had anything to do with this, or had they decided a couple weeks ago that they were going to do this. So I wanted to get answers. And when I want to talk hockey, one of the guys that I reach out to, because I follow him on Twitter all the time, and I just kind of like him because he's acerbic and kind of crazy, is Sam Fells. You can follow Fells on Twitter at FellsGate. You can check out his site where he's got great content, factsfromuncledale.com. And I say this not because he is a guest on the show, but because I really did enjoy it. He wrote one of my favorite sports books that I've read in the last 5 years, Madison Street Station. And Fells joins me now here on The Score. What's up, sir?
What's going on, Lawrence? Thanks for having me on. And the kind words. Well, you forgot handsome. You forgot handsome. Don't, you know, make sure you get that adjective in there.
I didn't forget handsome. I didn't have that written down. so I got so much stuff that I want to talk to you about on this. But you put together a really good timeline of what's going on with the Hawks over the last 8 seasons and kind of how we have gotten to this point, and it's on your site, factsfromuncledale.com. But for the Hawk fan that's in the car right now trying to make sense of all this, when did you see this coming, and why did this need to happen?
Well, I didn't see it coming this early in the season. I got to be honest. I was surprised they pulled the trigger 15 games in. I jokingly said on Twitter on Saturday, you know, if you weren't going to fire a coach, a section of the season where you have 4 days off would be the time to do it. But I honestly didn't think they'd do it. I also didn't think there was any chance Joel Quenneville was going to finish this season, or very little chance. The roster just was not up to snuff, and it was going to take a Corey Crawford miracle from the get-go to make them playoff contenders, especially with how everything was differing. So I'm not shocked at all he was fired. I'm surprised at how early it came. But as I said in that post you referenced, you know, Stan and him have not seen eye to eye since about 2012, and all the winning papered over that. Well, when you take away the winning, and there hasn't been any winning here in two seasons now, you've got a GM and coach who just see the roster and see the style of play differently. And generally, the GM wins that fight because it's the easiest thing to change. And I think that's what happened here.
Why were they at odds? Why couldn't they blend what they think is what Q thinks is winning hockey versus what Stan thinks is winning hockey? Why can't they blend that together to continue to make it work?
I wish I had the answer. I think Q still sees the game in a sort of older. Especially on tonight. I don't want to say conservative, progressive way, but he sees the game. The way older coaches and older GMs see it. And I think Stan sees the way the league is changing and sees how you have to play now. And those two don't line up. It's a faster game. It's a less intricate game now. And I think Quinville still worries about those things. And Quinville was still fascinated by big players, tough players, sandpaper, grit, all those things. I generally write the word fart after. And then Stan wants a fast team. He wants a fast, skilled team. He wants speed at every position. And sometimes that aligns with the players they have on the roster, and sometimes it didn't. And everyone's got their own breaking point. But I think Michael Kempney is an excellent example of how these guys differed in how they view how they team they want to be. Michael Kempney is a stay-at-home defenseman, but he's mobile. He's not that big. He does it a different way than bashing and crashing around and moving guys. He's quick with his stick. He moves the puck quickly. He stays out of the play. And I think that's how Stan wants to construct a defense. But Quinville saw him as too small or not aggressive enough to play the way he wants that half of a pairing to play. So he didn't play him or he didn't play him enough. And he got 2 years of chances and he never warmed up to him. And then he shipped off to Washington and then they watch him on the second pairing of a cup winner. And I think to me, and I just base this on feeling, I think that is something that is a perfect example of how these two just don't see eye to eye on how a team should be constructed and run right now.
You know what's funny, and we're talking with Sam Fels. You should check out his site, faxesfromuncledale.com, and you should be following him on Twitter at FailsGate. McClure wrote this on Twitter this morning, and I kind of amen and hallelujah to it. Look, I'm someone who enjoys hockey. I would never say that I am a hockey expert, and nor am I a hockey reporter. But even I knew that there was something wrong with the relationship between Bowman and Q. And I think that that's terrible, that I knew that people who weren't covering this team every day, the layman Blackhawks fan, knew that something wasn't right and it wasn't able to be resolved. I think that's a strange thing in a relationship to carry on while most people know that inside the walls of 1901 West Madison, folks are not on the same page on what their purpose is.
Yeah, it is odd. And it gets odder because there was a stretch of a few seasons where Quinville had a pretty big say on personnel moves, or his guys within the front office had their say and Stan had his say, and there were signings to placate one half or trades to placate one half and signings and trades to placate the other half. I think when you go back and you see all the trades for guys who had played here before, with none of which worked, you know, those were things to placate Q or his guys in the front office, and some others were not. I'm not saying all Stan Bowman signings worked. I think Brandon Manning is a fireable offense on its own. But, there was just always this push and pull, and they got away with it because the roster that neither one of them were here when that was developed or drafted was so good, it could overcome that. And that's not to absolve either of them of responsibility. These players became this good under Quinville's watch, and he certainly has a hand in that. How big, who knows, but you know, Duncan Keith is almost certainly not a two-time Norris winner without Joel Quinville. But it's an odd way to run an organization, but no one wanted to change it because it somehow worked. And when it stopped working, and you can debate when it stopped working, it certainly was last year. You could argue the year before that. Then you're just left with the problems, and they have to smooth that out. And at least now they have the president who hired the GM, who hired the coach. It's all streamlined, which they didn't have before.
How much of the Hawks being cash-strapped had to do with some of the issues that we're seeing now? And that coming from the success of winning three Stanley Cups and having two players that cost a lot of money. Is that a fair excuse for Stan Bowman to say, well, obviously I'd like to make the team better, but I've got to pay Kane and Taze. I had to pay Marian Hossa. So that limits what I can do.
It's absolutely a valid excuse. I'm not going to argue that Stan Bowman is some hockey genius. I think a lot of GMs shouldn't have their jobs in the NHL, but there is no more punitive system in sports than hockey's. It's the hard cap, and you get two mistakes maybe. I mean, if we look at the Hawks' past, the bad contracts they have are Brian Bickell and Brent Seabrook, and you can talk to me about Kane and Taves and how much they're making. I mean, no one really thinks that's a huge mistake. Those are the two mistakes, and those contracts cost you Teuvo Teravainen and Philip Deneau and maybe one or two other names, and you had to get rid of it, and you couldn't go out and replace those with the players of quality you'd like. It's an almost impossible job, and it's still an absolute worthy excuse. And to go with the problems, you know, that we have between Stan and Q, you know, from what I know, I don't know that the contracts given to Bickell and Seabrook were all of Stan's decisions either. You know, McDonough has come down and decreed at times what is to be done with these free agents, and there was no way they were going to let Brian Bickell or Brent Seabrook walk. And at the time, I thought it made sense, but the numbers they came up with did not. But on the flip side of that, you know, Brent Seabrook, when he signed that contract, is coming off that 15 cup run where the Hawks could only play four D-men. He was fantastic throughout that playoff run, playing 28 minutes a night, and they were terrified of letting him go into the last year of his deal or letting him walk. And I can sort of see why, because he was a fan favorite, but you can't run a team that way. And if you do, the penalties are so, so heavy, and they're still getting through that.
Spending a few minutes with Sam Fells here on The Score. You should follow him on Twitter at FellsGate. You should also check out his site, faxesfromuncledale.com. And do yourself a favor. If you are a Blackhawks fan, you will absolutely love the book Madison Street Station. So now what happens? What should a Blackhawks fan expect? Is this an attempt to try and save this season? Is this a punt on this season? How should we look at this?
I don't think it's a punt. I think it's an idea to maximize whatever this team is. And I can't ignore the fact that at that press conference and all the quotes we got, the word that kept coming around was communication. And I feel like they began to think that Joel either wouldn't or couldn't or just had checked out and would not explain to players why they were where they were, in the lineup or out of the lineup. And I think what you're going to see is a guy who the first thing he mentioned is communication and open door. So I think you're going to see the Hawks have a set lineup, that line shuffling that we complained about for a decade. I don't think you're going to see that. I think the Hawks are going to have four lines, and they're going to stay that way for a while. I think they're going to try and change the style a little bit, make it simpler, and try and be faster, get the puck up the ice as quickly as possible. Don't ask their D-men to do any more than they can. And I think it's an attempt to see, look, we're going to get our young, speedy forwards in a lot of space. We're going to see how much they can score. We're going to see if this defense, when Murphy is back and maybe Forsling is up, we're going to see if they can handle the least amount of responsibility possible. And we're going to see if Corey Crawford can take that and make them a playoff team. I think they can still compete for a playoff spot. I think they can. But I don't think they have anything higher aim than 7th, 8th seed, and I think they want to set themselves up for the next year and the year out when they've got a couple more kids they're really excited about who are tuned to play this faster game that I think they want to move to. I don't think it's a white flag in the season. I think they think they can make something of the season, and I think they think that with Quinville's system and what appeared to be increasing inattentiveness and friction with the roster, I just think they think this is the best way to maximize whatever the season is going to be.
What do you think of how we saw the players in the dressing room react to Q's firing? Now, look, hockey players are selfless. That's their whole. That's the bit that you care about what happens with the team. But I wouldn't say surprised, but I was listening as those players were like, I didn't do enough. This shouldn't have happened if I was doing my job better.
Yeah, I mean, there was some of that. Most of it came from Kane. I was sort of stricken with how, not surprised, but I noticed that I didn't notice a lot of heartbreak from the five guys who have been around here a while. And, you know, they've been in the league. Maybe they haven't gone through a coach firing in 10 years, but they've seen enough of them. They know what the business is. And I don't think any of them were surprised. Certainly Taves wasn't. I don't think Seabrook was. And, yeah, they said, I mean, that's what players say. Oh, if we'd done more, if we'd won, Quinville would still be here. But, I mean, that's, to me, that's boilerplate. I get the sense they saw it was coming, and I get the sense that they're kind of just ready to hear a new voice. I mean, we all know this, Lawrence. You go into work, and you have the same boss for 11 years, and it's, you know, that same voice. Eventually, you just want a new one, and I think they're kind of ready for it. I mean, some of Q's tactics the past couple years, when he would go to it, you could kind of see Taves and Kane and Keith rolling their eyes about line changes or ice time or this or that. Or then, like, I think they're more ready for a new method and a new voice than I would have thought they would have been.
Fells, I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much, as always, for jumping to the breaking news of the day. You were the person that I immediately told Herbie, I was like, we got to get Fells on. Because he's going to give us the real. He's going to tell us what's going on with this squad. So thanks for jumping to it and being on. And I'm not lying. I'm not just blowing smoke. Your book was great, and I loved it.
Well, thanks so much, Lawrence. You know I appreciate it. I'm always here for you. A, because I don't have anywhere else to go. And B, it's always an honor. So thanks so much.
Well, I'm glad that we got you. That's Sam Fells. I referred to him on Twitter as Chicago Sports Deadpool. Because that's pretty much who Fells is. His book, by the way, is called Madison Street Station. It's a love letter to hockey, and it is real and raw and terrific. So it's on Amazon. If you're someone who buys it at Amazon, brick and mortar stores, I saw it in the DePaul bookstore a couple weeks ago. So if you like hockey and love the Blackhawks, you should definitely pick up that book. Marvin Design Gallery by Evanston Lumber features Marvin windows and doors for new construction, remodels, and replacement. Visit their showroom in Lake Bluff or find them online at marvinbyevanstonlumber.com today. We're going to take a break. We're going to continue our college basketball season previews in the 9 o'clock hour. Yeah, we're going to talk a little DePaul basketball. I know. But we're going to talk with head coach Dave Lato. You're also going to hear from Dan Muller, the head coach of ISU. You're going to hear from UIC's head coach Steve McClain. All that is coming up next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.